Grandma seemed to have them too.
It's 10 o'clock. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston and 89.5 FM in Galveston. Stay tuned for Arab Voices. Good evening, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and live broadcast on the internet at kpft.org. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host, Mark. Yesterday, millions of Muslims around the world, including the Muslim community in Houston, celebrated Eid al-Fitr, the festival that marks the end of the month of Ramadan. Arab Voices wishes everyone a blessed and happy Eid al-Fitr. May God accept your good deeds. Kul aam wa antum bikhair, Eid Mubarak, wa taqabbal Allahu ta'atikum. Our guest tonight will be Amal Al-Khudairi, founder and director of Al Bayt Al Iraqi, or Iraqi House, which is an arts and cultural center in Baghdad. Amal is an expert on Iraqi history, regional culture, arts, archaeology, and music. We will be taking your calls live, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. But first, let's start with our local community calendar.
The Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee issued a reminder to all foreign national men who are currently in the United States and submitted to the special call-in registration, reminding them that the one-year re-registration requirement is still in effect. Men who registered with U.S. immigration authorities during the special call-in registration program initiated last year must return to their local immigration office to comply with the one-year re-registration requirement. For more information, please visit www.adchouston.org.
The Houston chapter of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee and Rice University Ruse Club are sponsoring a presentation on the economic and social implications of the apartheid wall on Palestinian populations. Tariq Abu Atta will be delivering the lecture. Abu Atta, a graduate from the University of Texas Law School, spent a year in the occupied Palestinian territories working with the Communications Department of the Negotiations Support Unit, a group of advisors to the PLO. This special presentation will be held on Tuesday, December 9 at 7 p.m. at Rice Media Center, entrance number 8 of University Boulevard. For more information, call the ADC at 713-532-4232.
The Arab American Cultural and Community Center will hold its first board of directors election on Saturday, December 6 at 2:30 p.m. 8 board of director positions will be open for election. You must be a paid ACC member at the time of election to vote and to run for board position. A candidate must be at least 25 years of age, a U.S. citizen or permanent resident in good standing in the community and of good moral character with no criminal record. The candidate must have been a regular member in good standing for at least 1 year since January 1998. The deadline for nomination is Wednesday, December 3rd. For more information or to nominate yourself, call the ACC at 832-351-3366.
Mark, and speaking of the elections, there's another important election coming soon in Houston, and that is our own local station board election for this radio station, KPFT. With us now in the studio is Masoud, a member of the election committee, to give us more information on this important event. Masoud, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here in your show, and this is a very important event that the KPFT is going through.
Thank you. Can you give us more information about the local advisory, about the local advisory station election? What is it all about, and why is it so important, and so on?
Okay, as probably most of members know, that we are going to process of electing members for local station board. I don't want to get in detail of this election because I know you have very, very short time for this section, but I'd like to talk about the importance of this election. To me, it's very much like fundraising. Members of this station helped station by the money, the pledges that keep KPFT going every day. Now there is another type of help the station needs from their members, and that's they get involved in the board which decides on the life of this station. First of all, this is a unique election. As Dennis Feathers, the supervisor of this election, always says, we are making history, and this is not a cliche. This is for real.
This is the first time that we do elections for the station.
That's exactly true. And also, any other radio station, this is the first time it's happening. And it's very important that we understand all this program that KPFT has every day. People, the programmers, bring different experiences. And we need same experience to reflect in the board. So I'm asking your listeners, especially Arab Voices listeners, to take this very seriously and to get involved, to become a candidate. It's very easy. We have different meetings for candidates. They can come over here, meet other candidates, and they need to just sign 15 signatures from KPFD members, and then they become a candidate.
Now, who's exactly eligible to be a candidate?
That's a very good question. If you already paid $25, and if you work 3 hours for as a volunteer, you know, if you didn't have $25, you could work 3 hours as a volunteer for KPFD, then you are eligible to become candidate. And you just come to station, there are forms, or you go on the internet, you go to www.kpfd.org, and there's all the type of information is there. You just follow those information and you're ready to be elected. And one unique thing about this election is not only it's very easy for all members to participate, also it's they can vote and run as a candidate in this election and bring their own idea to the board and help the KPFD get better and better every day.
So basically those candidates, if they get elected and they become local station members of the board of the local station, they will have a say on what's happening at KPFT and taking care of the day-to-day operations and so on, and what is good and what is not good for KPFT and so on.
Yeah, they're going to have oversee the budget, how the money is going to be spent, and how the program, evaluate the program, screen the program. And also, I need emphasis on this, and that's my personal opinion, that if you're young and you listen to this show right now, you are the best person to run for this election, because we need more young people energy to bring to the board for KPFD to work better and better for the community.
What about so if somebody wants to become a candidate, they go to the webpage www.kpft.org, download the form, fill it up, and bring it to the station, or they can just come to the station, 419 Lovett Boulevard, and do all the paperwork and get 15 people to 15 signatures to sponsor them, basically. Then what is the next step in terms of time frame, or how do people, even when the time comes for the voting, how would they know who is running?
Okay, now we need to talk about more details about this right now, because the deadline is December 5th. So what we are doing and what we have done before, we had a lot of meetings that we call it meet and greet candidates. People come over here, they introduce themselves, they have a lot of questions, and at the same time, they get the petition signed. Now, you can come at the December 1st, or you can come December 2nd, or you can come December 3rd, 4th, or the 5th, the last day. And if you're not sure yet, it's fine. Just come to the station, come to this meeting as observer. Then you can make up your mind.
And that meeting is in the evening, correct?
Yes, 6:30.
6:30. So that's the time where people could come and meet the candidates and
know
about them and so on. Okay. What about the time frame for the actual election? What happens with the ballots and then the...
Okay, then there's different times after the candidate is fixed. We know how many people are candidate. It's going to be the January 5th for sending the mailing the ballots. And then you get on February 5th the ballot back. And then hopefully on February 17th, 19, we're going to have the first elected board of KPFD.
And every paid member of the station will be able to vote with these ballots.
They're able to vote, and also they're able to run as a candidate if they already paid their $25, which
So we really encourage you all out there to become a vital, to become part of this important process for KPFT election. We encourage you all to run for the board. There are a lot of details posted on our website. That's www.kpft.org. Go there. There is a special section, a whole site dedicated to the election, and it will cover all the details about it. Masoud, do you want to add any more information about it?
I just want to give the phone number again. They can talk to Dennis Feathers if they have any question. It's 713-526-4000, extension 305. And the next meeting is going to be on December 1st, 6 to 8 p.m.
All right. We really appreciate you giving us some time today to talk about this important election.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I hope at least 5 people from your show be candidate for this election.
We hope so too. Thank you, Masoud.
Thank you.
What we're going to do next, before we go to our guest who is waiting patiently live in New York, we're going to update you on the latest news, and we have made it a summary of the summary of the news to save some time.
The first item in the Express News is the Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported today that the Bush administration has announced that it will trim nearly $300 million from the $9 billion package of loan guarantees to Israel, penalizing Israel for its settlement activities in the occupied Palestinian territories.
And just a few hours ago, the Israeli occupation army murdered 4 Palestinians in southern Gaza, including a 9-year-old child. Hani Salim Arabaya, a 9-year-old Palestinian from Rafah, died after being shot in the head by the Israeli occupation army. On Sunday, the Israeli occupation army shot dead 2 Palestinians, including a 10-year-old boy. At least 2,740 Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli occupation army since September of 2000.
International Solidarity Movement volunteer Radhika Sainath from Orange County, California, will be suing the State of Israel tomorrow, Thursday, for unlawful imprisonment, negligence, and breach of obligations. Ms. Sainath will testify against the gross misconduct of Israeli authorities in handling her arrest, during which she was prohibited from calling her lawyer, not served with an arrest warrant, and transferred to multiple holding centers over 48 hours, causing her to suffer mental trauma and agony.
A 12-year-old Iraqi boy and 4 other Iraqis were killed in a clash with U.S. occupation troops in the northern city of Mosul today. 4 bystanders were also wounded, as were 2 American soldiers.
And I was going to read you a nice long piece about Amnesty, but I'm going to urge you instead to go to Amnesty International's website and read their report on U.S. activities in Iraq. They're describing collective punishment being used by U.S. military forces in Iraq. But we have to go to our guests, so we might skip that for tonight.
Okay, and we will take a very short break now, about 60 seconds or so. And when we come back, we'll be joined live by Amal Al-Khudairi, founder and director of Al-Bayt Al-Iraqi, which is an arts and cultural center in Baghdad. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Arab Voices on KPFT, 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and live broadcast on the internet at kpft.org. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host, Mark. With us now live from New York is Amal Al-Khudairi. Amal is the founder and director of Al-Bayt Al-Iraqi, Arabic for Iraqi House, which is an arts and cultural center in Baghdad. Located in her family's Ottoman-style home, Ms. Al-Khudairi opened the center in 1988. After al-Bayt al-Iraqi was destroyed and rebuilt as the result of the first Gulf War, it remained the only intellectual center in Baghdad throughout the 90s, existing at a time when most institutions were forced to close. The center hosted exhibitions of contemporary Iraqi artists, concerts, lectures, and classes on a regular basis until its destruction by the U.S. bombs earlier this year. Amal al-Khudairi is a widely traveled expert in Iraqi history, regional culture, arts, archaeology, and music. Amal, welcome to the show. Thank you, and we're pleased that you are joining us. Amal, how long have you been in the U.S.?
Almost a month.
So you still have fresh memory and of the events on the ground there in Iraq and what's happening there. Obviously, you live there. Can you give us the latest on that, please?
I lived throughout the two wars and the embargo, so naturally they are fresh in my mind when I have my house being destroyed and my center, as well as all, you know, monumental things in Iraq, all ministries, hospitals, schools, universities, center of arts. So it is very fresh. I can still see the smoke coming out from the building.
How are people coping with all of this?
Iraqis are very patient, but they, I think, that are more than, you know, human being can bear. There's no security. When I left, electricity was still, you know, being cut. I don't know how it is now. Slightly, and the water is very scarce. No schools. When they started, there were no tables, no chairs. No security to go to school, especially little girls and women. And it's been very hard on women especially, and people being kidnapped. It's something which is not usually happens in Iraq. A new phenomenon of kidnapping people or kidnapping women especially and asking for ransom.
Just to clarify for us and our listeners, you've talked about the water, electricity and schools, that they are still not back fully. We usually hear on the mainstream media, and of course that's not where people should go for the real news, but what the mainstream media keeps repeating is that the Iraqis started to get electricity and water and school back, leaving the impression as if there were never any electricity or water or schools before the U.S. occupation of Iraq. How was it before the occupation compared to what it is now?
Well, also after the war we had electricity. We had telephones. Mm-hmm. Electricity was not cut until almost the last day.
So all of that was available before the U.S. occupation of Iraq?
Of course.
Yes. Tell us about the center, the one that you found and you've been directing, the Iraqi House, or al-Bayt al-Iraqi, about its mission and what it did exactly, and how could such a center be destroyed, and twice?
Well, maybe I was unfortunate because my center was on the river, and across the river there was the Ministry of Information, and behind me there was youth center, you know, which was government. And between the two sides, I was receiving in the middle all the rockets and, you know, bombardment. And it's an old house, you see. It's not a new house. We tried to, you know, rehabilitate it in 91 because it was destroyed again. We lost the first floor, actually. We couldn't build it at that time. Only the ground floor we rehabilitated. And we received all the shocks of cluster bombs and rockets. We were in between the two sides. And after the war, as if it's not enough to have all that, the place was looted. Some of the offices were put into fire, a very strange fire which had no flame, so nobody cared. The smoke went on and things didn't decay. And when we even thought of, you know, having at least one room for the organization which actually helped to bring us here, we cleaned one room and we tried to lock it, and then the second day we came and we found the lock taken and the whole door and the frame of the door was looted. And bit by bit they are continuing, taking bricks from the roof, panels, wooden panels, even the loom which I had, you know, for small work of knitting. It was first toppled down and then it was just destroyed. I suppose they used the wood for fire. I don't know.
Now, Iraq is well known as a rich country. Its culture, the science, the inventions that came there. It was not really looked at as a quote-unquote third world country, as some so-called experts mentioned on the local mainstream media here. Tell us more information about that, about the importance of Iraq's culture and history that is really so vital to the world now.
Well, you know, it has been throughout the history a cradle for civilization and different culture, you know, melted there from all other civilization which we have inherited too, from our neighbors, from the Roman and Byzantine, I mean, and the Farsi, and even Greek. Alexander the Great stopped in Babylon. He wanted to be ruling his empire from Babylon, and he died there, actually. Then, of course, the Islamic revival of all the other cultures, which it was, Baghdad was built as an Islamic capital for an empire which extended from China to Spain and lasted for 500 years and more. So this is Iraq. And then in modern history, it was almost the first independent country in the area. In 1921, we had a government and we started building ourselves as a modern country with the constitution that treated man and woman as equal, with all respect for all ethnic and religious people of Iraq. And I think it was the first secular country in the area. So politically, socially, and, you know, culturally, it's been always leading in its history.
I would like to remind our listeners of the phone number to call. That is 713-526-5738. Again, that's 713-526-KPFT. And we are talking with Amal Al-Khudairi, the founder and director of Al-Bayt Al-Iraqi, Arabic for Iraqi House, which is an arts and cultural center in Baghdad, Iraq. 713-526-5738 is the number.
Well, first I wanted to tell the listeners that when they call in, they'll be given a line number. And when you hear the line number called, you're on the air. We don't have enough people available this evening to actually get your names on the screen. So listen out for your line number. And I have a question, actually, that I suspect I may be preempting our callers by asking this, but I wanted to get our guest's opinion on the relative security in Iraqi cultural and architectural sites that were significant before the invasion started and how it stands now. And the example, I guess, that really sticks out in my mind, and I'm sure it's going to be mentioned by some of our callers, is that, you know, the library and the museum were pretty much destroyed when the Ministry of Oil was allowed to stand protected. I don't know if you were in Iraq at the time that this happened and how it was covered, I guess, by what was left of the Iraqi state media, and also how people reacted that you interacted with. You could tell us about that a little bit.
You are asking me?
Yes.
Well, I was eyewitness second or third day after the war. First, I went all over Baghdad, almost all over Baghdad. I saw all the ministries burned and looted, except, as you said, that's very correct, except the petrol ministry. There were two American tanks protecting it. I think it was sounding safe. Even the martyr monument was occupied by the American tanks. We have beautiful, actually international building, like the Ministry of Planning, for example, which was, you know, built by Italian, very famous Italian architect. We have the Sports Center also, and the University of Baghdad. Some of them were built before the Baath, of course. They were there as monumental things.
Can you tell me, sorry to interrupt, can you tell me what kind of media access that most Iraqis had at the time that these ministries were being burned, and how did people react to the situation?
Hardly any, because we received a Persian-Lebanon television, actually, for the local people who didn't have any other media. Jazeera in some houses, yes, Arabia too. I used to listen to the radio, actually, and I was eyewitness. I did go all over Baghdad, as I told you, because they came and told me my place is burning and being stolen. So going there, it was almost the middle of Baghdad, which is southgate. I went to a place called near the Wasaq. I saw all the ministries burning at that time, even the Majma' al-Almi, Center of Science. And of course you heard about the museum. The museum I went to a little bit later. I have a film actually of the museum with me. And we filmed with a friend of mine. He got the film himself. If you ask him, he's called Omar Benalouchi. He has been photographing all these buildings. What else should I tell you? There was also that happened to the art center. It was looted, burned, and they kept on looting and burning.
Now, this looting was, from what you saw, was it primarily Iraqis that were doing this? And does it have anything to do, do you think, with the massive release of prisoners that the Iraqi regime undertook just before the occupation? You don't know?
I cannot tell you, but I know that the tanks were there and the soldiers were there. And it's supposed to be the authority which should keep the security, at least the minimum kind of security.
713-526-5738 is the number. Please give us a call if you have any questions or comments for our guest, who is Amal Al-Khudairi, the founder and director of Al-Bayt Al-Iraqi, an arts and cultural center in Baghdad. 713-526-KPFT. And let's go to our first caller, line 1. KPFT, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening. And Assalamu Alaikum.
Alaikum Salaam.
Yes, Ms. Khudairi, I want to say I am so sorry. I am ashamed of, as an American, to know what my country has done to your country. When y'all's people have done nothing to us, it makes me feel ashamed, and I want you to accept my sincere apology. And my question is do you feel like that the troops in Iraq are going to come back with the same problems that our troops had in Vietnam in terms of post-traumatic stress syndrome and all that? And I want to say that I think the Iraqis are much stronger than Americans, and I think they're going to come out in the long run as winners, and I want to hear your comments and your answers.
They come as, who comes as winners? Sorry, I didn't get the question.
I think he was saying that he believes that the Iraqi people in general are going to come out on top of this experience, so they're going to, you know, win overall. I'm not sure how he means win, but I suspect he was trying to say that they're going to, you know, be positive in the end.
It's their land. It's their land. They have to protect it. And they have protected it before. I think they should read the history a little bit better. Not long ago, in 1917, when the British occupied Iraq, in 1921, we had a modern government. And the British were out. So, and it could be so.
Yeah, and also just like...
And this thing I wish not only for us, but for you as well. What is, as you say, you all I met here, they feel sorry. And your
I'm so sorry about what my country did to your country. Your people did nothing to us. Your people did not attack our country. And it just makes me feel ashamed that we did this.
No, but we are sorry for your boys as well. They have no fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You should put them back. We are sorry for them. We are mothers too.
No. What I was trying to say is that I am sorry what my country has done to your country. That's what I was trying to say.
Thank you for your feeling, but I wish... You shouldn't be sorry because it's not your doing, but I think each one of us, if they have thought of it,
mm-hmm.
and they tried to your representative in the parliament, they could have done something. What I'm sorry for is we thought America is a democratic country, and there should be a saying for the people who are now saying they were sorry.
And they shut down Al Arabiya TV, satellite TV in Iraq, so that tells you much about the new democracy that we're bringing to Iraq.
Well, you said that yourself.
Let me mention a couple of things for the caller regarding the occupation of Iraq. There was a nice article published today, as a matter of fact, by Ali Abu Nima, whom we've had on the show before. He's the one founder and creator of Electronic Intifada and ElectronicIraq.net. His editorial is titled, "What Has Failed in Palestine Will Fail in Iraq." And it's a pretty good article that talks about the occupation. No matter how long it lasts, no matter how good or bad it manages its occupation, it will never succeed. And we know what's happening in Palestine since 1948 until now. It just gets worse. There was another news report just a few days ago that came out about 17 U.S. soldiers who committed suicide in Iraq because they are unable to handle the situation there. 17 U.S. soldiers committed suicide in Iraq. This is astonishing.
Oh, yes, and I'm convinced that we're not even being told how many soldiers we truly lost. I have talked to people that have been over there, and they say that they've seen graves of U.S. soldiers that had not even been reported to the U.S. media. So I'm convinced that we have already lost more than 500 troops.
Yes.
Nobody is saying how many Iraqis are dying.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's
another aspect is if they are not the human beings. And then may I comment also about what I heard a very wise American lady talking on the radio, saying we shouldn't only count the dead, we should count all the psychological cases that don't come back, as they did from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly right. Well, I'm going to let some other callers get on the air. Peace to y'all.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Take care.
713-526-5738 is the number. Give us a call. We still have plenty of time. Let's go ahead and take line two. KPFT, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling. Mostly, I would like to ask about the art in terms of whether or not you believe that it will improve in a more democratic country, or if you feel that you would prefer to have Saddam Hussein or, I guess, another more dictatorial type nation take place in Iraq.
Don't you see the news, for heaven's sake?
I'm sorry?
Do you think Iraq is seeing all these tanks and soldiers and destroying all these private houses? When they follow the terrorists, you know, as the other day an American journalist said, it's not the terrorists they killing, they are killing families. When they go destroy these houses are not empty houses. They're full of children and women and, you know, adults, whatever you like. Especially those people who live in those small houses, they're crowded. They're dying every day. And do you ask me such a question?
But my question really is
the past to cover the present. Why?
Why don't you face
this fact that you came, as you said before, to liberate us, to create democracy in Iraq? And
right,
you are doing this by tanks and killing people in Iraq. You come to ask me, is it this better or that better? Do you compare the worst by the best?
No, ma'am. What I would like to ask is really whether you believe that in terms of maybe 5 years in the future, that the world may be able to better experience Iraqi art.
How?
Well, that's what
art,
I asked.
Look, art exists in every situation.
Really?
Sometimes the dear situation creates art, because it's an expression of human feeling, of human life. And art doesn't stop, even in the worst of either political or social, it does never stop. It can have a little bit of, you know, slowing down, but it never stops, because it is an expression of human being.
All right, and furthermore, I guess you would like to see, you believe that things are clearly much worse now than before the war in Iraq.
From security point of view, from, you know, social point of view, from intellectual point of view, do you know that five departments, very important departments, scientific departments, are closed now in some of the universities? And the number of students now are cut to, I don't know, the minimum which we ever had, because there is no security and there is no equipment, no even the simplest requirement in the schools and the universities. Before I came, I found the art school in Baghdad, which is called Academia, and it's affiliated to the university. The man, the head of the calligraphy department, was telling me we have nothing. Everything is, you know, lost, really lost, either destroyed or burned or looted.
Right.
That's the situation of most of our, cultural things. But
what do you believe that?
There has been an exhibition of art. They are expressing their own feeling about the whole situation.
Right. Let me ask you, though, do you feel that in 5 years, if the situation had been left the same with sanctions and economic sanctions that were obviously choking the country, compared to, say, 5 years from now, where there would be whatever government happens to form?
I am not a prophet. I am not a prophet to tell you
Sure.
I'm telling you what the situation is, and we are all really very optimistic about it. I have a pessimistic about it. We don't see any light. When I left the country, it was like that. I don't know now whether it's better or worse, because I have scarce news from your television. I can't get
the
whole reality, you see.
Sure.
And when I get in contact, well, 2 weeks ago, even less than that, they told me they didn't have electricity for 72 hours.
Okay,
that is one thing I think that we as Americans have a very difficult time understanding, because we live in truly, I think, perfect comfort. And I think it helps to hear from people like you who can tell other people's stories.
How can you know that? Because you live in such an affluent, such a happy, beautiful country, and the people are so, you know, innocent. So how can you know? And your media doesn't show you what's going on in the other side.
Okay, we want to thank you so much for your call.
Thank you, too.
Thank you. And let me ask you another question, Amal, if you may. On this tour, actually you're in the U.S. on a tour. My understanding is you've been invited by the Fellowship of Reconciliation, correct?
Yes.
And you're doing a tour of about 13 states. Tell us a little bit about it, and what is exactly the mission? What are you hoping to, the message that you're going to relay, and the reaction you've been getting so far?
You see, the Cultural Center of Bayt al-Iraqi had really done a great deal for so many people, for this intercultural relation between so many nations. You see, we had French, we had German, we had Americans, and we had, especially just before the war, almost a year before the war, when this hanging sword was on our head, so many groups from America came, and really they were very kind, hospitable, and they asked us if we could come here, and because they saw the reality of Iraqi people, they asked us to come, and as women, we were actually six of us coming to talk to American women. It was limited to that, but we couldn't come because they didn't give us visa then. We thought of having it in another country, but then the war happened and we couldn't leave, of course, the country. Then they came after the war, and they were very kind, very, you know, tried to help. They saw our dear situation. They wanted to ask to give us a chance to talk to other people as eyewitness. We don't represent anybody. They asked us just an eyewitness, because we stayed throughout this war. Some of the women who were supposed to come with us didn't stay, and others didn't want to come because they are, you know, so disgusted, let us say, by the whole situation, by the whole contradictory things which happened, you know, promising one side, then destroying the other side. So we came, two of us, a journalist and myself, as also because I taught at university before, just to tell what's happening there. And we are surprised by the really kind reaction here. And we are just, I am more now perplexed. How could it happen? Why should it happen? When the people are so good here, when they sorry for what happened, and then when we see this beautiful country, self-sufficient, it doesn't need anything, why should such a horrible thing happen to us? When you see your beautiful museum, your schools, your happy children going to school, why should our children be, you know, it's a country which is even smaller than California. Why all these arms and planes and continuous bombardment, the continuous hunting of the people? Why?
Well, it seems actually that there's a growing discontent among most Americans, and President Bush is doing worse and worse in the polls every day about, you know, when people are asked how the war in Iraq is going and how the occupation is going. So, you know, and it's been known for maybe 20, 25 years now that fewer and fewer Americans are taking part in elections, which is something that, you know, a trend that we need to see reversed for democracy to have any real meaning in this country, is that people need to take part and need to, you know, speak their mind at the ballot box. It's one of the few places in the world where you can fully speak your mind with very little fear of retribution. People are not whisked away in the middle of the night, at least not very often. And, you know, you can say pretty much whatever you want and be a member of a political group. So, you know, I guess your experiences with most Americans and the amount of sympathy that you're seeing, I can understand that it might not make sense, because the majority of Americans that I speak to also don't like what's happening, but, you know, the very, very few of them even voted. And I guess most of them feel like there wasn't much choice. So, you know, we hope that democracy in Iraq, if it is established, is something that Iraqis participate in more than most Americans do. And I really hope and urge that everyone will vote in the KPFT election and will vote in all the elections that are coming up in the U.S. generally. I wanted to remind our listeners, we've got about 10 minutes left, we've got time for a couple of phone calls, and I wanted to leave the mic open for the guests as much as possible. I've already spoken way too much. But if you could comment a little bit before we go to our next caller about your feeling as an Iraqi of how you would react to democracy in your country. We hope, of course, that it's going to happen. We don't know if it is, but we hope that it is. And how would Iraqis react that you know, and how would you take it? What would you do with it?
It's difficult. In either way, it's very difficult. Creating all these contradictions in the country, you know, putting a council which was built on ethnic and religious, you know, and not really representing the truth also, because we hadn't had any sample, you know, that population.
It's interesting, you mentioned the council. There's been a lot of debate backwards and forwards between the council and the American administration about whether there should be a constitution before elections or after.
but not much
discussion with the Iraqi people themselves about this issue. So, you know, what's going on there, do you think?
But again, about the constitution, you are as if there was no constitution in Iraq since 1921. This constitution admitted all the ethnic groups, accepted them as Iraqis and not as ethnic and not as religious, you know. All Iraqis were equal in that constitution, if you read it properly and if you apply it also. But constitutions sometimes are, you know, neglected by leaders, and that's what happened to our constitution. In that constitution, woman was equal to man, which you had it only in 1921 yourself. And now they're talking about it with resolution after resolution in the United Nations. We had that since 1921. Woman is paid like man. She has equal chances to go to universities, equal chances in work.
So perhaps it's more a question of re-establishing the old constitution, maybe?
No, there are some things to be modernized. I'm not saying that. But the essential things were there.
The foundation was there, and the infrastructure for, and so on. But like you mentioned, some of them may have been neglected.
Neglected or new things enforced on it, but these are not part of the essential constitution.
Yes.
And that was really very carefully read, because also we had some ethnic and religious problems and all that, and it had to, you know, see the Iraqis as Iraqis, not as Syrian and Turkish and I don't know, Kurdish and Shia and Sunni. We didn't have that. I mean, we had differences, true. But these differences are in all countries that exist now. What about Ireland? We didn't go to solve British problem of Ireland by tank. You didn't go and occupy Britain to solve the Irish problem, and it has been there for 200 years. So why are you creating this problem of Kurds and Arabs and Shias and Sunnis?
Okay, let's try to take one more caller before the top of the hour. Let's go next to line one. KPFT, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me. This is Tabitha.
Hi, Tabitha.
I was looking through the website for Beit al-Iraq, and I noticed, I'm not sure, I'm not an art expert, but some of the things look more modern than the others. I was just wondering if there is such a variety, if there had been such a variety in the archives. And also, I was wondering the extent of the damage, if you lost everything or if there had to have been some things that have survived.
Can you repeat that for me?
Sure. I was wondering if the items that you had in Beit al-Iraq were all ancient, or if you had some modern items as well. I was also wondering if everything was destroyed, or if some things have maybe survived.
It's turned into ashes.
Mm-hmm.
If you, there is, we have an email address for us. Ford has it. If you ask them, especially
yes.
Patricia Ekman in Ford, she photographed the place before the war and
yes.
after the war. And you can see yourself what happened to it.
Okay. And you said that everybody here would have the website?
Let me give you that website.
Okay.
That website is www.4usa.org.
Aha, okay.
That's 4USA, FORUSA.org.
Okay, I didn't click that one. Okay. I was also wondering if all of the pieces had been ancient pieces, or if they were modern works as well.
Have what?
I was wondering if all of the artwork was ancient, or if they were modern.
No, actually, a little bit, there is a little bit of confusion. The place is called For Art and Craft.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a cultural also activities there.
Okay.
So mostly I concentrated on craft because, you know, it was neglected in Iraq. And it plays a great role in our life.
Mm-hmm.
It has the continuity of the social and sort of inner life of Iraqi.
Yes.
Craft is very important in our life. But they didn't have a special place to exhibit their work. They usually have it in their homes, you see. And you have to go and search for it. It was very difficult for visitors of Iraq to find it for themselves.
True.
So this was the first center in Baghdad that had all Iraqi crafts from north to south, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the importance of this place, because before you never can find it in one place altogether. Wood crafts, ceramics, even all type of clothes, all these little things which people didn't know about. Mm-hmm. And to be exhibited in a, you know, nice way in one place, so visitors of Iraq can really have a general idea of what Iraq craft is.
Yes. Okay, Tabitha, we
want
to thank you.
Thank you. I'm so sorry for your loss. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Mm. And we're nearing the top of the hour, the end of our show. We've been listening to Amal Al-Khudairi, the founder and director of Al Bayt Al-Iraqi, Arabic for Iraqi House, which is an arts and cultural center in Baghdad. Amal, we want to thank you so much for being our guest tonight.
Thank you very much for giving me this chance.
Thank
we,
you.
We hope your trip to the U.S. is successful and you achieve all the purposes that you intended when you came.
What we want really to say to the Americans, we really want their voice back. What